I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hi, welcome to Amazing FBA. This is your host, Michael Veazey speaking, and this podcast episode is brought to you by Reliable Income, led by Adam Hudson. Reliable Income is an Amazon community and course, and Adam Hudson is an Amazon seller. He's doing well over seven figures a year now, and also a very straightforward Australian. And in a sea of hypey Americans, that is quite a refreshing change. Adam will tell you it straight when it comes to how much money you need to private label, which is measured in the thousands of dollars these days, not hundreds, and how long it takes to really get a private label product off the ground when you're working alongside the day job, which again is measured in months rather than weeks. Now, alongside that, Adam, however, is a very, very positive guy, and he has a lot to offer in terms of getting a really great positioning on Amazon for your products. So high quality products, selling at a really good price and keeping the competition at bay, which it's never been a smarter time to adopt that strategy than in 2018 when Me Too or Cheap are just going to be trashed by the Amazon crowd or have their price disappear into the floor overnight. So I really, really think his approach is sustainable. Hence, I think that Reliable Income is a very good word for his type of training. If you want to find out more about Adam, as I said, amazingfba.com/Adam. If you want to find out more about his training and or take the four-part video training course, which is free, go to amazingfba.com/reliable, R-E-L-I-A-B-L-E. Just for more transparency, I am an affiliate of that, so that will buy more than a coffee, as is the traditional about affiliate sales, but what it will do is help cover some of the costs of running the podcast, which hopefully benefits you, some of the software that I have to use to keep in touch with the guests, and my beloved and long-suffering editor, Daniel, who is worth his weight in gold, but I have got to pay him because even Daniel, even editors have to eat as well. So I've got to pay for blogging, podcast hosting, the rest of it. So that helps to cover some of my costs there. And I hope you'll check that out. Now on with the show. Hi there, and welcome back to Amazing FBA. This is your host, Michael Veazey. Do you ever get the feeling that you're spinning your wheels with some kind of income stream or job, but you can't quite put your finger on why it feels wrong? It feels like somehow it's not working the way it should be working. You're not really getting a bang for your buck. Well, if that's you, then I can sympathize with that. And I very, very recently came across a fantastic podcast by a guy called James Shramko, who's from superfastbusiness.com. I definitely urge you to check him out. There are various people that I follow that are way outside the Amazon space, and I'd really encourage you, whilst, you know, this is a bit like that TV program back in the 80s, and this is dating myself now. I don't know if it was in the States. It was certainly very popular in the UK, although I think it was an American program, but it was called Why Don't You? And it said something like this in the end of the theme tune was, why don't you just switch off your television set, go out and do something less boring instead? So basically, I'm telling you to stop listening to Amazon podcasts all the time. It just sounds a bit hypocritical, but relax, I've done that for you. So I'm suggesting, though, that you take stuff from outside the Amazon space and apply it to your Amazon business or growing, you know, potential Amazon business of the future. So James Shramko is one of those people that I listen to for fantastic business advice, which is very, very applicable to me as an Amazon seller and somebody who has more than one income stream as well, which is for most of us a reality these days. So if you do have a more than one income stream, then he's got a fantastic sort of 10-step way of evaluating that income stream against a sort of reasonably objective set of criteria. Now, I never, ever think there's a substitute for intuition and common sense. So this is to be used in addition to those, not instead, I would suggest. But nevertheless, it's fantastic because you can give each one a score out of 10. And then what I've done is I've taken it a step further and made it uber nerdy. And I've basically created a spreadsheet for myself and assessed all of my income streams the other day. Now, I'm not going to put that on you, but I've cut it down to four potential income streams, which I'll go over in a bit once I've talked about the criteria. And if you want to download that, you can get that from the blog at amazingfba.com/225. And you'll find a little cheat sheet. And if you wish, a spreadsheet, if you want to be as analytical as I am. Just bear in mind that just one plea, one caveat before we start with this. A spreadsheet is not something that once you've got it down in black and white and because it's on a computer and because it has numbers, doesn't make it right. Okay. The same is true for product research or suppliers. All these numbers are just a guide. Your intuition and your common sense have to ultimately, I think, be your guide, right? Having said that little caveat, which I'm sure my lawyer would be pleased about, let me plunge in here and talk about the different points here, 1 to 10, and then we'll go over those in detail. The first one is the effective hourly rate. I love this one, and James Franco was a person who put me onto this. I've come across similar metrics before, not exactly the same. Very, very sensible, very simple. You basically add up from any income stream, for example, your day job, you add up all the money you get paid by your boss, and then I guess you should take off your tax, but I'm not going to look at tax just to simplify things. But then you'd have to take off your commuting costs. If you're commuting into London, for example, and you've got a train journey from Surrey or somewhere in the home counties like that, Hertfordshire, it's going to cost you maybe £2,000 a month or something, or maybe not that much actually, but it's going to cost you quite a bit of money to come in each month. I guess £2,000 is like a season ticket or £5,000 or something. So maybe each month is going to be, you know, 500 quid or something like that, which is pretty frightening, but it adds up quickly. And then you take the profit from that, which would then be the amount that you have left, and then divide it by the total number of hours you put in. It's amazing how those numbers are quite different from figure number two, or criterion two, which is the overall profit per month. Overall profit and overall income are things that we're always very, very aware of, and we get very proud of, and we say, look at, you know, look at how much money I've earned in my, you know, day job this year. But let me just give you an example of why you need to be careful about the difference. Let's say you got a day job and your income is £3,400 a month, which is about £40,000 a year, which is a nice salary for most of us, I think. Let's say your train fare is really expensive. You're spending £500 a month on train fare, which, you know, if you're commuting into London from somewhere like Birmingham or whatever, is quite possible. It may be lower in many people's cases, right? But then let's say you spend some money on coffee and lunch and whatever, and you spend £100 a month on that. So that means you're spending about £600 a month on your costs, and your profit is about £2,800. I'm not going to bore you with lots of figures, but let me just say that if you put in 40 hours a week into your office and you're commuting an hour and a half a day, you're spending, by the way, each way, which for people, again, working in London is not untypical. It might be true if you work in LA or San Francisco or New York. If you're somewhere more local, then it might be a lot less extreme, right? But that's 720 hours of your life, by the way, commuting. That's a reason itself to get an Amazon business. Emails outside work time, because I bet my bottom dollar that I've allowed for 1 hour a week of that. I bet it's more for most people. Work social hours, whether it's, you know, you have to meet new clients or, you know, you have to have drinks with colleagues. That adds up to a lot more hours than you'd expect. So about 2,700 hours, I'm making that. Here's the shocking statistic. Now, the profit per year is 33,600. Maybe it's 35, but the effective hourly rate, when you add up the amount of hours that you put in, not just at the office, but commuting to the office and little bits and pieces around it, is £12 an hour. That is not going to make you rich. And if you feel like you're working really, really hard for not much money and you do these calculations, it really is eye-opening, right? If you compare that to other things that we'll talk about in a minute, I'm going to go into the details right now, and I'll look at that in a second. But if the effective hourly rate for a day job that pays £40,000 a year, which is above most people's salaries in the UK, is £12 an hour, then if you're looking at a well-run Amazon business, it can be anywhere between £50 and £100 an hour. And property can also score really highly on that metric as well, right? So very eye-opening. Just the effective hourly rate calculation, if you do nothing else, I would really, really urge you to do that. We're all conscious of how much money we make overall because we have to do tax returns apart from anything else, or we get pay slips from work if we are employed. But the effective hourly rate calculation, all the money in, all the money out, what's left is a profit divided by the number of hours, the total hours involved in that income stream. I promise you it's eye-opening. So I could stop right there and you've already got your value from the podcast, I promise you, right? But let's continue because there's more good stuff. So it's not all about money, but a lot of it is a metric about money. The third criterion is recurring revenue. So is it recurring? Now, effectively, a day job is kind of recurring because you're on a contract forever, you know, it seems. You're not probably. Some types of things, you sell something once and then that's it. For example, let's take another example. If you're a freelance photographer and you do weddings and bars, mitzvahs and what have you, and evenings and weekends as a side gig. Basically, weddings tend to be one-off events, or at least people like to think so at the time. And even if somebody gets remarried, it's not exactly something you can A, advertise, and B, the gap between is probably, you know, measured in decades rather than years. unless you have very unusual clientele. So that would be an example of something that's very much not recurring revenue, right? People only graduate from university once. People only get married once normally, or they think they do. If you have, for example, a property, then once people have signed for a 12-month contract, they have a recurring monthly rent that comes in for those 12 months. And if they keep renting it, then possibly for longer as well. Which is linked with another metric, which I haven't split out as a separate one, which James didn't really go into, which is the lifetime customer value. So if you rent a flat to somebody for £1,000 a month and it's a 12-month contract, the lifetime customer value is going to be averaged about £12,000, which is worth a lot more than selling somebody a wedding gig, and then you charge them maybe £300 for the wedding photos and it's a one-off and that client's never going to come back to you again because, like we said, it's not recurring. That's another metric that you might want to think about when you're evaluating these things, right? Again, we'll talk about an Amazon business in a second, but these Amazon business tends to stack up very, very well alongside these things. We'll talk numbers in a minute. Fourth criterion, passion. Very important. How much you care about your day job, your service, freelance business, or Amazon is something you've got to be honest about for yourself, you know? People get very passionate about their Amazon businesses, and certainly that can be really cool because you're in charge of it. It's cutting edge. It's online. It could be also that you learn to hate Amazon at times when they mess up your inventory. They don't respond to your messages. They close down listings on the basis of what seems like a flimsy idea or flimsy reason and so forth. So I have to say that I have a love-hate relationship with Amazon sometimes, but overall the passion is fairly high because it enables me to do really cool stuff online. Again, you might be passionate about your wedding photography and you might actually prefer that to sitting behind a computer. But on the other hand, you've got to weigh it up against other things. So passion is an interesting one. Day job is a classic case where the passion can be like 1 out of 10, but you'd like the profit. And what you're effectively doing is trading the overall profit per month or per year for passion. And once you put the other factors into the mix, which you haven't even thought about, sometimes you really get very clear, you know, sooner or later, I'm going to have to leave this situation. Sixth criterion, is it a growing market? For example, if you are selling on Amazon, then automatically you're part of a trend, which is a massive trend, a long-term trend and growing fast, which is to say every year in the USA for the past few years, roughly speaking, online retail has grown about 20% a year. Now, that could be an implication that it's grown as far as it's going to go, but actually I disagree because very simply, only about 88% now of all retail sales in America happen online. So most of them are offline. UK were early adopters in this for whatever reason. It's about the highest level in the world, but even that's only about 85% or 86% of all retail sales happen online. So most of it's offline. Everything's going online. That's a huge growing trend that you're standing in front of. Now, whether that's true for your particular niche market, if you're trying to sell a silicon spatula on Amazon, probably isn't growing. In the sense that, well, maybe the demand is growing, but you're going to have to work really hard to take market share. So it's not all as simple as, yes, there's a growing market, therefore it's a good business, end of story. You've got to look at the competition. But nevertheless, it is part of a growing trend. It's always going to be easier to grow a business in a market that's growing as a whole. So that's an incredibly important metric. A lot of people don't think about this in terms of their own day job until they get downsized. Because if you are in a market, for example, if you work in a brick and mortar retail store, the economics of those are so horrible these days. And so many of them are going to the wall. If you worked at Woolworths, for example, in the UK, a very famous old store in the UK, and you worked there for 25 years, you might get the impression, because it had been around for about 100 years, you might get the impression it will be around forever. But actually, you're at the front of a shrinking market trend, which is on, you know, brick and mortar high street retail, which is a tough business to be in. So even a day job isn't as secure as it looks when it's in a shrinking market. Seventh criterion is it scalable? This is a very simple one. Let's compare an Amazon business with, say, your little freelance business as a photographer. And it could be anything you like. It could be anything like I do when I sometimes play the piano for weddings or what have you, and or Christmas parties most recently. Can I put myself in five places at once if five people want to book me for one particular Saturday before Christmas? And the answer is obviously not, right? Now, if I ran a business where I sent out other pianists instead of me, I could do that. I could be the guy sitting behind my computer controlling the, you know, the phones and the bookings and sending the emails. And that is a way of doing things. That's what an employment agency does. So that is scalable. However, then you've got all the risks and difficulties of employing people. And, you know, that's a hassle. But for most simple freelance businesses, you simply can't scale things. If you get, you know, five bookings a week, you have to work five times. And if you have 10 bookings a week, you just can't take them all. Whereas on Amazon, the absolute killer beauty of the whole thing with fulfillment by Amazon is that you can sell 100 units a month or 2,000 or anything you like, which doesn't really directly impact the amount of time and energy you need to put in. Yes, there is a link, of course, because if you sell a lot of units, you need to see where that's going, make a reordering decision. At that point, you might want to negotiate with the supplier. You may have to liaise with a freight forwarder, and you probably will have to do some work to get that inventory across. But it's not, you know, 100 times the amount of work for 100 times the sales is nothing like that proportion. If you sell 10,000 units in a month, you're probably going to have to do some serious reordering work. And maybe you spend 20 hours of that 1 month working on that, but you won't spend anything like the increased time on it. So Amazon scores hugely there against a freelance job, also a day job. I mean, this day job is ultra unscalable. You know, you earn £40,000 a year. That is what your company is going to pay you. If you go and work an extra 10 hours a week, if you're on a salary, which is mostly fixed, unless they have overtime, it's not at all scalable. And if it is overtime, it's not really very scalable because you can only work another few hours a week before you run out of hours in your week that you're actually awake, you know. The eighth criterion is an interesting one. Is there a nice byproduct? So, for example, if you are a freelance photographer, can you sell, in addition to your time of selling, for example, your photographs, can you create some stock photos that you can sell as a recurring income to iStock Photo or Getty Images, one of those guys? Now, a friend of mine who's a photographer has been considering doing this for years. It's difficult to get in, but that might be a nice byproduct. With an Amazon business, you might want to look at something like, you know, if you're already in the sports niche and you are a personal trainer, for example, can you sell your clients your own, you know, private label product or white label products yourself, either in the gym or preferably you can send them to Amazon and then you can get them to refer their friends and so forth. So there's a nice sort of byproduct, or if you like, synergy is a posher word for it, between a couple of different businesses. So Amazon can really be a part of that for lots of businesses and can tie in, if you do it right, can tie in quite well with a lot of other businesses and client bases that you may already have. Number nine, are there easy wins? So with a day job, again, there might be an easy win to be had if there is an obvious promotion coming up and you're in the frame for it. But most of the time, if you know, there might be certain easy wins you can get. There might be, for example, if you're a sales manager, there might be an easy account that you know you can close and increase your income. That's a little bit more entrepreneurial. For most of us, that is very limited. So the day job doesn't score very highly on a lot of these criteria, I have to say. It depends on your job. If you love it and the salary is really, really high, then I guess it's probably good, in which case you may not be listening to this podcast. But I speak to quite a lot of high earners because I have quite a few high earners. High earners outside of the Amazon space who are my mentoring clients. And they are still looking to build a different day job or income stream rather and replace their day jobs, you know. And then people who are doing £10,000 a month or, you know, well into seven figures, like 100 to £120,000 a year kind of range, who are busy either as mentoring clients or in my mastermind building themselves an Amazon business because they want a different lifestyle. It's not all about the money that you make per se, but it's partly about flexibility and it's partly about the money you can make per hour of work, which is quite different. The 10th and last criterion is easy access to customers. Is it easy to get customers? In a day job, that's kind of down to your employer. You may never even deal directly with customers. And by the way, these apply to every type of income stream. I don't have a day job and I haven't had for ages, but I've had like about 10 different income streams, which is too many. I need to eliminate something. So I need to evaluate, you know, what needs to go or be scaled back and what needs to be scaled up. Trust me, having done this recently, this is really revelatory. It really, there'll be some amazing surprises for you. I would be amazed if there weren't. And if you find that you've done this exercise, come back to me at amazingfba.com/FB, as in Facebook. And if you're not already a member of the Facebook group, and give us some feedback on this, I'd be fascinated to hear it. So the 10th one, easy access to customers. You may find that getting wedding, you know, people to put their hands up online and find them online and get those gigs from them is not that easy because there are a lot of other people doing that as well. If you're an Amazon business, getting access to customers is very, very easy because Amazon has the customers. They have their credit cards on file, for goodness sake. Now, you have got to compete with other people. And so, you know, you've got to bear that in mind. But broadly speaking, it's one of the easiest places to get to customers. I mean, really, once you launch on Amazon, getting to that point can be a painful journey if you are private labeling. And I'll make no bones about that. But really, if you just retail arbitraging to start with and you just want to reach a set of customers, you just whack it in there. And if you've chosen the right product, Amazon will find the customers for you immediately. No search engine optimization, no advertising, no finding customers, no leafleting, no networking, all the other stuff that other income streams can involve, right? And even if you compare that with property, I mean, again, it's a bit like the freelance business. There's a demand for property if you've chosen your property right in a student area, or maybe it's for young professionals, but there's other people searching as well. So that can be a little bit difficult to do on your own, as I discovered, which I now have a property manager doing that, for example. So just a quick recap. Effective hourly rate, which is your income minus your costs, that's your annual income, and then divide by the total number of hours you spend per year or per month, whatever the calculator that I've put on the site for you at amazingfba.com/225 will do that work for you. Overall profit per month, which is something we're mostly conscious of, especially around this time of year in the UK when you've been doing a tax return. So in January, by the time you hear this, it'll probably have gone and you'll have got that pain out of your way. So congratulations. Is there recurring revenue? And one of the parts of that is, what's the lifetime customer value? It tends to be a lot higher per customer if it's recurring. Amazon scores quite well there. It's not strictly speaking recurring revenue if you've got lots of different customers buying the same kind of product all the time, but it kind of acts in a similar way. So you work once and get paid multiple times. Passion, that really depends on you. I mean, I think for me, Amazon is you know, a love-hate thing. If you are wonderfully passionate about photography, but you can't make a living from it, then, you know, passion might be one of the things that's been keeping you there. Can you sell it? An Amazon business. Oh, I didn't even think I mentioned this. Number five, forgive me. Can you sell the business? If you have a day job, no, because your employer isn't going to offer you the business. It's up to them to, quote, sell it, but you can't make money. If you have a freelance business, can you sell it? Not really. If you have a website that gets lots of traffic, you could sell that if you're like a wedding photographer, as for example, or a pianist or a piano teacher, but that's the only thing you can sell. You can't sell the whole business because you need to physically be there, right? Which is always the clue. An Amazon business, is it sellable? 100%. And of course, I've had Corin Woodmus from FBA Broker, or thefbabroker.com, on a couple of times, and we'll get him back to keep the latest state of play with that. But there's people buying and selling Amazon businesses all the time these days. It's very, it's a very standard thing now. It does help to try and sell it in the USA or to have a US component that's bigger than the UK market. But a friend of mine sold, along with his business partner, he got half the revenue from an FBA business he sold recently, which he sold for, I think they sold it for a couple of £100,000. He took £100,000 and put an extension on his house and kept working on other Amazon brands. Very nice. So that's absolutely possible, just like with property. So in other words, you know, physical property and Amazon businesses, in some ways, work in quite a similar way. I guess it's like building a property from scratch as opposed to, you know, finding a property, which means that you have to put more legwork in with creating an Amazon business, but you don't have to put anything like the amount of capital in. I mean, obviously, there's lots of funny money ways of doing property that I know of, and I'm not a property expert, but it interests me very much that a lot of people who've done a lot of property, you know what I mean? They've rented out property, they've bought and sold, and are renting out property, and now coming over to Amazon as an opportunity because property is getting tougher and tougher in the UK, at least, anyway. And if you're listening in the US, or Australia or Canada, then you may be in quite a different situation. I personally think that a mixture of an Amazon business, property, and maybe one more income stream is kind of ideal because they balance each other out really nicely. So number six, is it a growing market? We've already talked about that. Number seven, is it scalable? Number eight, is there a good buy product or a sort of synergy? Number nine, are there easy wins? Number 10, is there easy access to customers? So just to give you an assessment on just a score out of 100, which is somewhat arbitrary, right? I've given a day job as an employee, even on £40,000 a year, which is really nice. I've given that 39 out of 100. Maybe that's a bit generous, but because the effective hourly rate is only £12 an hour. The freelance work, let's say you're passionate about being a photographer, and passion counts for a lot. I was a pretty poorly paid conductor for years, and I probably will still do a bit of that for the reason of loving it. But I have to be real about the economics as an income stream. It kind of stinks. Now, if you're a freelance photographer and you do a ton of work for a local hotel, you know, the weekends and evenings, and then a few local businesses, let's say you make 3,350 and your monthly overheads is about £30. That's probably a bit unrealistic. You're probably going to spend more than that. You'll buy some cameras and stuff. I know what photographers are like. Let's say you spend £50 a month, to be generous, then you're making £2,750. And I'm looking at sort of fairly conservative numbers for the hours you put in, about 286 hours a year. Your effective hourly rate is only £10. Now, that may be not, if you happen to be a freelance photographer, maybe those rates are completely wrong and you make £20 an hour. But do your sums. The total number of hours you spend is often quite shocking how small an amount you're working for. It's very common for freelancers or small business owners to realize they're working for minimum wage. Like in the UK, that's about £7 an hour. If that's you, that's okay, but assess it realistically, you know? So that gives you an idea. Property scores pretty well on these metrics. You know, for example, in my personal case, and I can give you exact figures, I don't mind sharing this, I'm not in the property space, but that I'm in the last tax year, I made the pre-tax profit about £6,000 a year. And I spent a total of about, if 24 hours, maybe even less, liaising with my agent. So my effective hourly rate was off the charts, like £250 an hour of my time. Of course, really, I've had to put a lot of inventory in, sort of not inventory, but capital in that to start with. So although it's been an effective use of my time and a great investment in many ways, it is not, you know, in a lot of ways, it's not scalable, because to scale up from that, I'm going to have to find crazy amounts of capital. Now, there are ways of scaling with other people's money. I'm aware of all those, but that they seem very, very high risk to me. I'm not willing to go there. So property's been pretty good. Let's take an example of an Amazon business. I'm just keeping the numbers very simple, but they're very, very achievable numbers. Let's say you've got five products selling an average of £4,000 a month. Right now, you can, you know, change all these numbers as much as you want. Get the spreadsheet from the blog post amazingfba.com/225 and have a play yourself, right? But if you say have £20,000 a month of revenue, so five products doing about £4,000 a month, at about 20% gross margin, right? That's without taking out overhead into account. You're looking at about £4,000 a month profit, which, you know, is not that hard to achieve after maybe a year, 18 months of work, right? It will take some time to get there. I know people have got to that point within a few months, you know? So that isn't a promise an artificial expectation, but it can certainly be done. So let's assume you've got some overheads, like you've got the seller central account. So it's about whatever that is, £33 a month or so. Accounting and bookkeeping of 100, email marketing software at £30 a month, market research 40. You don't even have to have those. They're nice to have at around that level, a few SKUs. Then we're looking at about £200 a month overhead, and therefore about £3,800 a month profit. Now, even if you spend about 15 hours a month liaising with suppliers and 20 hours a month doing market research and marketing to grow sales. In other words, you're being aggressive and you want to grow existing products, find new products and get new suppliers. Then even then, the effective hourly rate works out about £50. If I remove the, and forgive me looking down, just playing with the spreadsheet here. If I remove the any sort of things to do with growing new products, so you don't bother researching things, you don't liaise with suppliers and you don't bother marketing existing products aggressively, that effective hourly rate then jumps up to £132. And in other words, once you've got the products up and running, and if you don't really want to do much except just maintain it, you can end up making an incredible amount of money with very minimal, you know, I'm not saying incredible in the absolute number amount of money, but the amount of money per hour of effort put in is pretty low. Now, obviously, that's when it's up and running. If you take all of the sort of, if you like, hours overhead before you get it up and running into account, it's going to be a lot lower than that. But it's still going to score very highly against a day job. I promise you, you just need to sit down and play with a few figures and you'll see for yourself. So very, very interesting. This is basically designed by James Shramko, as I said, of Superfast Business, to evaluate a variety of income streams, but it's not specific to Amazon, but I think it's very important to put Amazon businesses in context in your life and to see how these things stack up. Now, I think more importantly than anything, you need to evaluate, as I said, before you eliminate. So the previous podcast, we talked about eliminate before you create. So that is to say, you're going to have to make space to build an Amazon business. Now, I'm not suggesting quitting the day job and then plunging into this. We talked about that. There's a gap between when you start building a business and when it starts making revenue. And that's true for Amazon, and it's true for blogging and podcasting, my experience, and it's true for many other things as well. But then now we're doing that thing of evaluating before you eliminate. But having done the evaluation, I think sometimes something's really paying off the page at you. And once you look at it, you think, well, okay, I'm not passionate about my day job. The effective hourly rate is rubbish as well, considering the amount of hours I put in. I need to start working to leave that. You know, that would be an assessment that would be very common for a lot of people. A freelance business, it can be a bit of a shock once you add up how many hours you put into it and how much you get out of it. If you're really passionate about it, you might keep that as a passion project. But if you want to, you know, start a family, buy a house, you know, make renovations, you know, put your kids through private school, whatever your aspirations in life are, you might have to make some hard choices and do less of that thing. Property can score pretty big. That is not something I'm an expert in. I can't really advise. I have one property that I let out, and that was a good decision. But it doesn't have the potential for growing and becoming such a red hot quick wins business as an Amazon business can do, depending on how you run it. And then Amazon business, really, I mean, I've got the score for this, you know, £20,000 a month business, which is kind of theoretical because those aren't exact numbers. But I'm getting a 77 out of 100 because I really think that the overall profit per month is pretty good, but the effective hourly rate is really good, and it's sellable. It's in a basically growing market, or that chain that depends on your niche. It's very scalable. You have lots of byproducts. You can tie in very easily with other business models, you know. So this can serve as a tool primarily for helping you to decide what to scale back on and what to scale up. For me, it's just a reminder as well, because I have an existing Amazon business, or in fact, two existing Amazon businesses, of just what a powerful platform Amazon is once you get it right. Getting it right is an art, and it is an art more than a science. So somebody who says you can solve everything with spreadsheets is probably BSing you, and I don't want to be one of those people. So this spreadsheet will not change your life, but it might help you to just make some sense of, you know, the existing income streams you have already and what you need to do and what you need to change. So hopefully that's helpful for you. What I would say above all is this, that you cannot begin before you've stopped. So in other words, you've got to stop doing certain activities, or at least reduce them before you start new ones. If, like most people, time, you know, work expands to fill the time available, which is Parkinson's law. And if you don't eliminate some things, you will not have the space to build an Amazon business. And if you have got an existing Amazon business and you've got other income streams as well, you've got to sit down occasionally. And I would suggest once every 6 months or once a year at the minimum, and evaluate, okay, you know, is it worth me continuing with this other work that I'm doing? Is this product actually worth continuing with within your Amazon businesses as well? And we can talk about that separately and evaluating products against each other. But it's very important to evaluate potential income streams against each other, but even more importantly, to evaluate existing ones and go, right, I'm going to scale that up, I'm going to cut that back. So I think I made my point. Anybody who has anything to say about this, I'd be delighted to hear from you at the Facebook group, amazingfba.com/FBF, as in face, B as in book. You're very welcome to comment at the blog as well, but I think primarily I'd expect you to go there in order to grab yourself the downloadable cheat sheet or the spreadsheet, which is at amazingfba.com/225. Thanks very much for listening. Happy hunting. Speak to you in the next show. Cheers.